The Guardian.
This Guardian podcast is supported by Squarespace, the all-in-one platform that gives you the power of beautiful design. So you can do more than create a website, you can set yourself apart. To start your free trial, visit squarespace.com/guardian.
Bright light city, gonna set my soul on fire. Got a whole lot of money that's ready to burn, so get those stakes up higher.
Hello and welcome to Tech Weekly. I'm Ollie Mann. This week, I've jetted off to the home of showgirls, casinos, and ill-advised marriages, Las Vegas, for the CTIA Super Mobility Show, an annual gathering of the mobile tech industry's dreamers, analysts, and salespeople, all trying to convince each other that what they're flogging is the next big thing. This year's speakers have included Wikipedia's Jimmy Wales and DreamWorks Animation's Jeffrey Katzenberg, with sessions including how to deliver the next generation of wireless and how to convince your drone not to commit suicide. Coming up, I'll hit the show floor to talk Apple, Samsung's 5G and dronalism. This is Tech Weekly from The Guardian.
Viva Las Vegas! Viva Las Vegas!
I'm here on the show floor at the Venetian Hotel. Hard to believe that in the floors above us there are tourists taking gondola rides around a shopping mall and gambling away their holiday budget. Here in the basement ballroom level, it is all business. I've just entered the complex through a massive banner which says, immerse yourself in the new mobile ecosystem. I'm pretty sure that's something Elvis never sang. That said, there is quite a bit of Vegas sparkle here as well. I'm walking around this sort of vast carpeted empire of bling. Chandeliers hanging above me, and even the odd glamorous booth babe trying to lure me onto her pitch. Upstairs are the big auditoria where the big names deliver their keynotes. Here's a flavor of what we've heard this year.
Hello everybody, and welcome to Las Vegas and CTIA Supermobility. Supermobility is about connecting everything wireless. As our world grows, we all must be smarter, more on top of the latest technologies and trends. Every morning, before doing anything else, more than a third of us reach for our phone. And 81% of us keep our phone by our side all day long.
Is smartphone growth done? The answer is no, of course not. There's tons of gas in smartphones. We have tons of opportunity to continue to grow them.
We know that it's not the screen that sits on the table in your family room or hangs on your wall. It's about the mobile device you carry in your pocket. Last year in the US, adults spent more time on their mobile device than they did on their personal computers.
Our future in this industry, in our opinion, is about mobility and video.
Sometimes I think that there are only three things that you need to know about the future of mobile, and it's video, video, and video. That's how dominant it is going to be.
I believe what we will see in the next handful of years is a revolution in the types of entertainment that we are going to consume, and it's all going to be made for mobile.
Every single thing in our lives is going to be connected. Let me say it a different way. Right? If a device is connected, it's smart. If a device is not connected, it's dumb.
Today, we stand on the cusp of another revolution. Tomorrow, wireless won't just connect people. Wireless will connect everything. 99% of our physical world. 99%. On behalf of CTIA, I'm proud to represent you and host Supermobility, because wireless is undeniably the platform of the future for innovation and entrepreneurship.
The organizers of this, the CTIA, are essentially a pressure group here in the States. The acronym stands for Cellular Telecommunications and Internet Association. And really, they exist to put pressure on the government to ease regulation on the tech sector, which funds them. For example, they campaign to free up more spectrum. So why do they decamp to the desert, you might be wondering, to have a massive conference? I think perhaps just to keep pace with the speed of this sector, as the show's director, Rob Mesereau, explains.
The unique nature of the U.S. wireless landscape at the moment, we have 98% penetration for advanced fourth generation LTE services. So what the heck does that mean? What it means is we've got an awful lot of bandwidth to do an awful lot of things. So an important phenomena happened about 2 years ago now, and that was the carriers in the United States ceased to be telcos and started being broadband providers. So we've evolved from this wireless hardware marketplace to this experiential IoT and really connected life showcase.
And tell us who the delegates are here, Rob, because I've been looking through the list of exhibitors and it's not all of the people you'd expect. You know, yes, there's Samsung and there's Ericsson and you're partnered with Microsoft and the rest, but you've also got, I mean, for example, Jeffrey Katzenberg of DreamWorks was on stage today with Verizon. This is a conference that reflects the fact that digital culture now, it's about entertainment, it's about cellular devices, it's about the Internet of Things. It's actually a huge sector.
Indeed, it's all about mobile first. And I think in this day and age, if you don't have a mobile first business philosophy, you don't have a business. And so you see lots of people from the music industry. So Bob Pittman was here, you know, the man who created MTV and is now the head of iHeartMedia. And it's a really interesting mix. So you've got all that here with carriers, with developers who are writing all the code around this. You've got game developers, game publishers. You've got publishers of music. You've got publishers of television shows and content and movies. And then you've got this Fortune 500 set. So you've got CIOs and CMOs from the Fortune 500 are here seeking new ways to integrate mobility into their businesses to make themselves more profitable, more streamlined, you know, and at the end of the day, we're all here to make some money.
Now we're sitting in the press room, and one thing that strikes me that's different about this press room compared to others that I've been in over the years is there aren't any computers in here, apart from the ones people have brought with them. Are you a mobile-first conference? Is this reflective of the fact you're expecting people to be doing all their work on their iPads and their mobile phones?
Indeed, and I think that's an astute observation on your part. I thought you were going to talk about the crystal chandeliers in the press room. You don't normally see those either, but when you're at the Venetian in Las Vegas, you do.
You know, I've become blind to that. They're just everywhere.
It's a little over the top, but it wouldn't be Vegas if it wasn't. No, I think that's absolutely right. I think, you know, we want to rethink it. So in the sense, when we started to think about supermobility as a platform for this amazing technology and what it's done, we started talking about how disruptive it is. So the mobile industry has disrupted everything that we've just talked about. Music, it's disrupting the transportation business, it's disrupting the content business. I hope to God in my lifetime it disrupts healthcare, because healthcare needs to be disruptive in this country anyway. Wireless can fix those things.
And putting the show together this year, what do you think are the sort of big themes of 2015?
The broad themes, I would say, are really around, you know, connected life and IoT. And, you know, IoT is now maybe an overused acronym, and people have already moved on to the Internet of Everything. And I just think about all the different ways you can use mobile. So I heard an interesting fact the other day, because InterDrone, which is a large drone event, is attached to this show as well. And we have a fly zone on the show floor, and we were flying drones in the keynotes on the first day. You know, the reality is the drone actually came out of the wireless industry. So a lot of the detail with regard to the camera and the design and the materials and the GPS and all those types of, you know, things that make it fly and move around really came out of the wireless space. And it makes you stop and think, well, what else is going to, you know, manifest itself from the wireless, all this technology that is purpose-built for this mobile environment. And I think that's part of the whole mobile-first movement.
And when you talk about the Internet of Things, or as you say, the Internet of Everything, if that's what we're calling it now, do you sense there is public appetite for that? Or is it being led by manufacturers who want something to invent?
Oh, quite the opposite. This is a consumer-led revolution. People want it to be more connected. Now that we're connected to each other, we're going to start being connected to everything else. And I used to do this speech that I can't do anymore that says, what a great world it would be if my alarm clock was connected to my coffee maker. But now it is. So unlike in years past where I could say, well, 7-inch screens on smartphones is really the trend this year. You really can't say that because it's different. Again, it's not about, you know, we're a hardware marketplace. We're really selling an experience now.
Now, here on the showroom floor at CTIA, one of the big conversations is all about 5G. If, like me, you've never heard the phrase 5G, you'll be pleased to know that I've now come across a massive billboard with the words, "The future will be 5G," and a man standing next to it, whose name is Bo Peisgeer, who works for a company, indeed I believe is the president of a company called Lemco, who say they have a solution for 5G. So Bo, talk me through it very, very slowly, at 3G speed, if you will. What is 5G, and is it something that is actually coming, or is this a pipe dream?
Well, hi. Our vision for what 5G is that you want to have broadband everywhere and connect everything. But to do that, you need to make sure that the price of the connectivity is right. So what we've done is we've taken the difficulty out of LTE, simplified it, and made it very Wi-Fi-like. So it's like a Wi-Fi access point where you hang it up, you plug it into your Ethernet connection, and you have an LTE network.
Okay, but what does 5G actually mean? Is there a mathematical system at play where, you know, there is a relationship between 3G, 4G, 5G, or is it a name that is just applied to faster, more even coverage?
Well, 5G means a couple of things, right? Things that get most of the attention is faster speeds. The other thing that 5G means, ubiquity of broadband, that it's everywhere. The other thing that 5G people are talking about is connecting everything. You've seen some early 5G connections for people, the smart watches that came out, wearables where you're monitoring your heart or perspiration levels on your clothes, downloading it to your smartphone, and then the Internet of Things where machines are talking to each other and they're being managed. Well, to deliver all of that, you need an easy platform, and it needs to bring down the economics of the gigabyte. So right now, putting your toaster on a carrier's network at $15 a gigabyte doesn't make sense. But if the costs are about the same as it costs you to connect a Wi-Fi point, maybe it does make sense to have your toaster talking to your refrigerator, talking to your grocery list.
And also, a lot of stuff that I'm seeing around at the conference is about smart cars and connected cars. Obviously, cars drive through black spots, areas where you can't get 3G or 4G at the moment. And 5G is about coverage too. How would you ensure an evenness of coverage in places where at the moment you can't get a 4G signal?
Well, we're doing some stuff with car manufacturers where we're actually putting a 5G access point in the car, powering it by its battery. So think of a car as a moving tower, and as the cars come together, they bring bandwidth with them, and they're like a living thing, like a swarm, and they increase the bandwidth with the cars, and they're passaging messages between the cars and hitting a cellular tower among each other.
And of course, it's the Silicon Valley cliche, isn't it, that every company says they're here to make the world a better place when really they're selling us more shiny things. But what is the thing that you are excited about coming down the pipe with 5G?
Well, the thing we're excited about is really changing the economics of making broadband available. So it makes sense to put all your things on it, and it also helps bridge the digital divide. We're launching a project in China for a city, and one of the users will be all the kids in this area. It's called Gigi Har. There are 80,000 students. They're going to be provided as part of the school with $40 tablets, and they're going to be charged $1 per gigabyte on a ubiquitous LTE network that covers them at home, at school, connects the schools to each other so they can share best practices among each other. So we're really cracking the digital divide, and kids before who couldn't afford LTE costs $7.50 a gigabyte in China from China Mobile can now bridge the digital divide.
Well, the device manufacturers are thinking about 5G as well. I'm with Rick Svensson, who is the sales and marketing director for Samsung North America. Rick, what are Samsung doing in this space?
We are all over the 5G space, Ollie, and we're developing and have been developing 5G networks for a while now. So it's in the research development stage. It's going through the standards, and we're staying in front of it, both on the network side and on the device side, to ensure that when it's ready to go, we have both network and device ready.
Verizon were talking about bringing 5G to the States by 2016 yesterday. Is that realistic?
No, it's absolutely realistic, and we're very proud to be part of what Verizon is doing. We're going to help them out with that trial. It will be a pre-standard trial. Verizon was a leader in 4G, and they have every aspiration to be a leader in 5G, so it's very timely that they tried to do a trial in 2016.
Now, I remember a time in the UK when 4G was being talked about for the first time, and phones were coming out that were 4G enabled, and there wasn't any infrastructure to actually make them work. What are the challenges you come up against when you're developing 5G in a handset and yet selling to countries where, you know, there are still patches they can't even get 3G?
Well, I think one of the advantages of being with Samsung is that we have the end-to-end ecosystem here, right? So we are testing 5G now, even though maybe the commercial networks are several years out. We're testing in Korea with, you know, prototype of the device as well as prototypes of the network. So I'm confident we're going to have devices when the network is already. And you're right, we saw that, you know, there's been cases in time in the past where, like when the first GSM networks were launched in Europe in the 90s, at that point there were no devices, but there were networks.
And what are the benefits that you see coming with a faster network? I mean, obviously, yeah, you can download stuff more quickly, but people are talking about a more even spread as well. Why would that go hand in hand with increased speed?
Well, I think these new technologies will allow you, and maybe in areas, and today we have issues, like if you get deep within in a building, or you might lose your signal. So I think the new technologies will have better ways to penetrate into buildings. They will reach, you know, different corners of those buildings. They will reach further out in the countryside. We're going to see improved network coverage. We're also going to see where, you know, right now we've basically sold everybody on the planet a mobile device, right? So the next thing that's coming, and this is buzzword, is the Internet of Things, right? Where, especially from a Samsung perspective, I don't know if you heard about this, but we do manufacture a fair amount of consumer electronics. So at some point, we're going to start embedding wireless connectivity in those. They're going to communicate with the greater cloud, and there's going to be all kinds of applications and ways to maximize the use of your consumer electronics.
So I'll be able to download a movie onto my washing machine.
You'll be washing inside the washing machines. You'll be watching your movies there. Yes, something like that.
Well, despite Samsung's huge presence here at the show, there are some new products from one certain rival manufacturer that everyone here is talking about. Bush. Not really, it's Apple. More on their iPhone announcement and the role of drones in providing electricity. Next.
If you run a mobile business, you need a payment solution that's simple, safe, and seamless. With Braintree, you can start accepting PayPal, Apple Pay, credit and debit cards, and more across any platform. With superior fraud protection, customer service, and fast payouts, it's the full-stack payment solution for your business. To learn more and for your first £30,000 of transactions fee-free, go to braintreepayments.com/techweekly.
I'm with tech analyst Shelley Palmer. And Shelley, you were saying earlier in a session that I attended that this, 2015, is the transitional year for mobile. They've said that about every year, haven't they?
Oh, every year for the last 15 years has been the year for mobile. And the reason is clear. That's wishful thinking. Everybody who's involved in the mobile business wants so desperately to be right about that. But here's why this year is the year of mobile. This is the year that Facebook hit a billion logins in one day worldwide, and that was August 27th, and substantially 70% of those logins were on mobile. This is the year that Facebook's mobile video, their little 3-second sound off, hit you in the head, mobile video experience, has become a marketing juggernaut. This is the year that people are interfacing with the world specifically and only and first on mobile. It is no longer the second screen or the third screen or an add-on screen. It's the first screen in an undeniable way. And so the transition is complete. If your Google-optimized website is not mobile-friendly, Google will penalize you now. This is the year of mobile.
And this is also the year that we saw, finally, Apple launch the iPhone 6S and 6S Plus and iPad Pro. And some bloggers and analysts are saying, well, big deal, it's just another iteration. You think different, to steal the Apple phrase.
Well, I that is a funny thing. Yeah, it is their phrase. In practice, it's iterative, not innovative. That's absolute. You can't look at an iPhone 6 Plus S or 6S or whatever they're calling it, 6S Plus, and say, oh my goodness, this is so innovative, I can't believe they came up with that. But if you look closely at what Apple has done, they've demonstrated a strategy. They've demonstrated that they have a strategy for taking over literally your life, cradle to grave, across all your devices. They've built a prison called Apple Prison. It's gorgeous. When you enter it, you'll be very happy, but you'll never leave. And the iPhone 6S and the new iPad and Apple TV and HealthKit and what they're doing in auto and HomeKit, across the board, every place I look, I've got data collected by Apple and an emotionally satisfying experience delivered, hardware with a huge margin. I'm sorry. I'm hugely impressed with what Apple's doing. They had an event miles away from here in Cupertino for a small group of people in a small little arena, and they took all the thunder out of the mobile industry. So if that doesn't impress you, and you could say, oh, I've seen it before, really? You're way too jaded to understand what it means. I aspire to own an Apple product. I can't afford it, but I aspire to own it, or I can afford it and I do own it. Show me another handset manufacturer that can say that. So I'm hugely impressed that Apple continues to just make news every time they breathe in and breathe out. And if you're too jaded to see that, then you don't understand consumer marketing.
Well, they do make news, but you know, you look at the worldwide data and more Android handsets get sold. And yet earlier you were saying Xiaomi at the bottom of the market are going to do great, and Apple at the premium end of the market are going to do great, but you see problems for Android moving forward.
Problems for Android are clear. Look, the bottom of the market is the bottom of the market. You could sell a billion pieces of Bazooka bubblegum, or you could sell, you know, one Rolls Royce or one super high-end luxury car. Which would you rather be the seller of, Teslas or bubblegum? You make the choice. It's up to you. Samsung doesn't sell either. Xiaomi sells bubblegum, and Apple sells luxury cars. And in the middle, there's nothing. And so Samsung and LG and HTC and everybody else who isn't either Apple or Xiaomi is suffering because they're locked in Android prison. And Android prison is way worse than Apple prison because it's not a homogeneous, unified experience. There are all kinds of different forked versions. There's carrier bloatware. There's handset bloatware. There's really no stock Android experience. So when I come to a new Android phone, I don't know what I'm going to get. I don't know if I'm going to be able to use it. I have no interest in learning something new, and there's no individual feature that any handset maker and or carrier will give me that makes me go, oh, I must have this. I'm going to break my Verizon contract because AT&T bloated up their Android XYZ with something I have to have. Look, Amazon forked Android, and they made Kindle Fire, and they made the Fire Phone, and it's like, really? No one even noticed. It's going to fail miserably. Amazon's an amazing company. They have done so many things brilliantly. Forking Android and calling it something that you are going to want is not brilliant.
Yeah, that's absolutely right. And there are still classes that they discuss the idea of drone journalism.
I've headed across the strip now to the Rio Hotel, where there's a sister event to CTIA, which has grown so large it needs its own hotel to host it. It is InterDrone, an occasion dedicated to launching, in all senses of the word, new drones and discussing the issues around the burgeoning business of drone flight. And Sally French, drone reporter for MarketWatch, joins me now. Sally, I imagine this must be the biggest drone event you've ever attended.
Oh, absolutely. As you said, they needed their own hotel. It's huge. There's so much energy, tons of sessions ranging from the engineering side of things, the legal side of things. There's so much knowledge here, and of course, so much enthusiasm for drones. There's also been so many great announcements. DJI, the world's biggest drone manufacturer, just yesterday launched a new product. It's a native camera with a Micro Four Thirds. It's a Micro Four Thirds camera, so huge sensor that's going to be a game changer, especially for professional photographers.
Yes, and this delineation between professionals and hobbyists was very much the subject of the fascinating session you've just been part of, which I've just been watching, which is all about so-called dronalism. Now, you launched a drone journalism program back in 2013. Why do journalists need to know how to fly drones? Why can't they just ask their colleague who knows how to do it?
Yeah, I think it's really important that journalists know how to fly a drone, and then they also know the ethics and the laws that go with journalism. They understand the difference between paparazzi and reporting important news. And so we're starting to see more journalists using drones. Traditionally, journalists were using aerial photos, but from something like a helicopter. That's really, really expensive. I think a helicopter costs on average $1,300 US per flight. A drone, to put that into perspective, costs $1,300 to buy one time, and of course free to use forever. And so we're really seeing this surgence of more and more people using drones to cheaply get great aerial images to report their stories.
Yes, well, it might be important for journalists to learn the rules and do it right, but as you say, if there's money to be made and people have these things as a hobby anyway, they're not going to be able to help themselves. You know, we've seen this situation where people see an event unfolding, a riot, a car crash, a terror threat. They reach into their pocket and they pull out their smartphone. They might not even think of themselves as being citizen journalists, as you just put it, but that's kind of what they are. If news networks then buy that footage, you're not going to be able to stop people flying their drones over fires.
No, and people will continue to fly over fires and send their photos into the news stations because they want that. It's a great image. And so it's important that we have this conference like this so we can keep learning how to educate more and more people. You know, drones are cool because they really democratize. Anyone can get an aerial image. It's a matter of bringing us all up to that same level.
Okay, so finally, when it comes to great uses of drones and great drones that are coming out, as a drone reporter, what is the thing that really excites you about the year ahead?
Well, Ollie, I'll tell you my favorite use of a drone is there's actually this guy who's a scientist, and he's trying to collect whale DNA, and it's really hard to get whale DNA, it turns out. But when they blow up their snot, that has their DNA in it. So this guy is flying drones over whales, collecting their snot when they blow up their air, and he can do his research. And so stories like that really inspire me. And I think in the next year ahead, as the technology becomes more ubiquitous, we'll keep seeing really fantastic, just wild uses of drones like that.
Well, when it comes to pioneering ideas for drone technology, you don't really get more cutting edge than the idea of drones being used to provide electricity. Udo Zillmann is founder and managing partner of Daedalus Capital, a venture company specializing in tech investments in airborne wind energy. And Udo, you think drones are going to replace wind turbines. Why?
Well, it's two things. So first of all, it's lower costs, and second, it's a higher output. So if you think about the cost for a wind turbine, it's 50% of the cost is just the structure, the tower, the foundation. That's tons of steel and concrete that you could save if you would have a flying wing instead of the turbine. And the second is output. The higher you go, the higher the strength of the wind is, and the more wind you can get also on not so good wind locations. And if the two add up, you could come to wind costs that are maybe just a quarter of what we currently have.
But, you know, here at InterDrone, people are talking about, oh, I don't know if we can put an extra camera on the drone because that's going to weigh it down and change the flying time. If you're putting a wind turbine on a drone, how much time can it be airborne for, realistically?
Well, that's a different different set that we have. Because our drone is tethered to the ground, it doesn't consume energy while flying. It flies like a kite, much more or less. And many people also call it wind kites rather than drones. I like to call it drones because it makes clear the technology that's behind it, which is the control technology. You can add much higher weight to it. And for example, Google is doing the largest project, and their 85-foot wingspan drone, that is like 25 meters, weighs 2 to 3 tons. So we are really talking about a different size of drone than what the people here are usually working with.
And typical Google, isn't it, to get involved in this kind of investment, which is way out of the area of most tech companies. Do you think maybe if your vision of the future comes true, it's tech companies that will be running energy supply, not energy companies?
It could very well be. I mean, it's really interesting to see that the incumbent companies, the Siemens and ABB and GE, they have some kind of the know-how you need for this, but also you need more of the drone know-how to build these new companies. So it could rather be, and we have interesting talks with aviation companies who say, well, this could open up a whole new market for us, and it's, by the way, the largest market of the world, the energy market, and we, with our know-how that we saved or that we built up for the military or with drones and aviation, let's talk Airbus and other companies, we could just enter a huge new market with our technology.
And I was talking to Sally French, the drone reporter, about this just a moment ago. The perception of drones in the public is A, that they're possibly a bit dangerous, B, that they're basically a toy. Is that getting in the way of trying to progress drones as a serious business investment?
Well, that's a debate out in the community of airborne wind energy, and some people are not happy that we try to call our it drone. On the other side, I think it makes it much simpler to the public to understand why it's possible now, and it doesn't sound as crazy maybe like flying wind turbine. And this is that was the usual way around. We started explaining why this should be possible, and then we explained, well, look, it's the same technology, the same sensors, the same electronics that is used for drones, and we use the same. Well, it's just simpler to just call them wind drones. And well, the perception is always difficult. It's one, the war that's still in many people's mind when it comes to drones. The other is also regulation. So some in the industry would like to be rather not regulated as an airplane or anything like that. So there's pros and cons. I think for the perception, it's nice to call it drones.
Well, Udo, it's absolutely fascinating. Thanks very much for joining me.
Thank you very much for having me.
Well, that's it for this Tech Weekly special from the CTIA Supermobility Show. My thanks to CTIA and all of my guests, Rob Mesereau, Bo Peisgear, Rick Svensson, Shelley Palmer, Sally French, and Udo Zillman. I've been Ollie Mann, the producer is Alana Chance, and we'll see you next week. Viva, viva.
For more great downloads, go to theguardian.com/audio.